You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
You are Locked On Bears, and I'm your host, Lauren Cox. I'm an analyst for Pro Football Focus, and I write about the Chicago Bears for NBC Sports Chicago and BearsWire. I'm here to bring you your daily Chicago Bears news and analysis. Today, we'll be joined by George Shahuri, one of the lead analytics gurus at Pro Football Focus. And we're going to go in depth on the topic of analytics and particularly how it pertains to the Chicago Bears. So we'll start off with some bigger picture analytics concepts to kind of make sure we all have a baseline understanding of what analytics are and how some of the processes work. And then we'll dive more specifically into the Khalil Mack trade, which the analytics community has largely come on the side of the Oakland Raiders in that deal. And we'll also talk about a little bit more in depth of what the analytics say about Mitchell Trubisky and why the Chicago Bears might not be set up for as much success in 2019 as they had in 2018. Now, I want to preface this conversation with George just a little bit before we get started, because as you'll be able to tell by the title of this podcast, the analytics are not too favorable about the Chicago Bears. And I want to make it clear that it is the analytics. It's not George's personal opinions. It's not even necessarily the opinions of Pro Football Focus. But what George and I are going to talk about today are a set of statistics and what those numbers say. And the idea is that these numbers are objective. These are a reflection, you know, whether they're traditional statistics or Pro Football Focus statistics, they are purely a reflection of what the tape sees. And I think that's an important distinction here. And even when you break it down by Pro Football Focus grades, the grades are not just somebody's opinion of, oh, well, how good do I think player X is? Pro Football Focus grades are just a mathematic accumulation of a season's worth of every single play getting a quantified grade. So it's just an equation, really, at the end of the day, that's adding up each play individually. So it's not anybody's big picture opinion. It's just analysis of each play cumulatively. And so that then gets added into this analytics equation and brings up broader analysis from there. So as George unveils and discusses some of the unfavorable things the numbers show about the Mack trade from a Bears perspective, and even the upcoming projections for this season, I just want to make it clear that it's not George or Pro Football Focus hating on the Bears or anything. He's simply telling you what the numbers say. If the numbers said positive things and said all these reasons to be excited, that would be what the message is. But the message is purely, here's what the numbers say, and it's not anything to do with any opinions about the team or, you know, things like that. And George addresses it a little bit in our conversation here, but I wanted to get out ahead of that a little bit. And I hope you'll kind of take this with an open mind here with that understanding going in. I think there's something we can learn from these analytics, and it's all just a piece of the equation, right? I think even George and Eric, the other data scientists there that really go in depth on this stuff, would tell you the analytics and the numbers still don't tell you the whole story. The whole idea is to try and figure out how to make them tell you more and more information as we gather more data and figure out what we can learn from the data, but it doesn't accurately predict everything 100% and doesn't contain the whole equation. So that's sort of the long preface and preamble to say, you know, take this for what it's worth, but keep an open mind to what George is going to say and maybe let him set expectations a little bit more down to earth for what this next season may bring and kind of what the analytics say about this Bears team. With that, we'll turn to our guest. Joining us now on the Locked On Bears podcast is George Shahuri. I'm never going to accurately pronounce that last name, but that's why he's on Twitter at PFF George and not PFF.
Right.
Shahuri.
I started off my career doing Teach for America, and let me just say that I went by Mr. C and did not make seventh and eighth graders pronounce the full last name, but George works just fine. Thanks for having me on, brother.
Yeah, well, Mr. C here is the Director of Research and Development for Pro Football Focus. He's on Twitter at PFFGeorge, and you can hear him on the PFF Forecast, which is their analytics podcast. And that's, of course, what I want to talk about today. So, George, just to start here, let's go really big picture broad here. How would you define analytics when it comes to your context and with Pro Football Focus? I think some people would go as broad as to just throw any and all statistics as, well, that's analytics. But from your perspective, how do you kind of describe the field more broadly?
Yeah, that's interesting. I actually like to think of it as, you know, if you think of it just really broadly as all, you know, numbers and stuff like that, you really miss the big point, which is to look at the data and add, you know, truth to it, basically. So, you know, you'll hear things like, oh, you know, this team is 25-2 when they run the ball 30 plus times in a game, right? And that's a stat. Now, that would be considered very bad use of math, right? And if someone who was in the analytics community put that out there, they'd get run out of town, right? So I sort of like to think of it as the use of math to, you know, bring about understanding, deepen understanding, and hopefully get closer to the truth about what really matters, what really predicts things going forward, what really happened in the game, how good really is a player. So sort of adding a layer to all of the stats that we actually have.
So one of those predictors I know you guys have been working on, and we put it out every so often, little blurbs here and there about it, working on wins above replacement. And I guess just to start, how is that calculated? And what is that? I mean, I think from the title, you can kind of understand generally what it means, especially in sort of a baseball context. But what does that mean, and how do you calculate that number?
Yeah, a WAR is such a fascinating thing. And my co-director over here of R&D at PFF, Eric Eager, PFF Eric, if you want to talk to him about football or his favorite band, which happens to be Whitesnake, he has done a ton of work on wins above replacement. One of the things that he started with, you know, a couple of years ago when we came together and started doing math here. And what it is evaluation of players across positions. And so that's so important in football because all the positions do such different things. And it's so hard to say, well, okay, I see this play resulted in a touchdown, but how much value does the quarterback really deserve? How much value does the left guard deserve? And so what you need in order to do that, the first thing that you need is you need to know how well did a player perform on each play. Okay. And so that is exactly what PFF strives to do. It's what we've been doing since 2006, grading every player on every play. And so to give you an idea of why that's important, say that the quarterback throws a screen to the wide receiver, the receiver breaks five tackles, scores a 60-yard touchdown. Well, we don't want to give the quarterback some really high grade for that play, right? Because he just did a very basic job that just about any quarterback in the NFL could do. And so our grading will give the performance, a high level performance to the wide receiver, an average one to the quarterback, maybe a corner missed a tackle, so he'd get, you know, a negative grade. And we do that on every single play, right? We do that for offensive linemen, we do that for all the defenders. And so when you're done with each game, you've got this composite of how each player performed in every facet of the game, right? How well did the quarterback throw the ball? How well did he run it? How well did offensive lineman pass block and run block? And that gives us a picture of, okay, how well did each player perform? Now, the second part of that, in order to actually say how valuable each player was, is to say how valuable is each facet of play, right? Because that's really what tells me, okay, that, well, this right tackle, for example, he's a great pass blocker. What does that do for my team? And so what we can do is, using some math, we can map each facet of play. How well does each facet of play predict wins at the NFL level? So if you think about that, you've got passing, you've got receiving, you've got running, you've got run blocking, got pass blocking, the defensive side, pass rushing, run defense, coverage, special teams. We grade every player on every play, special teams as well. And so we're able to then say, okay, this is how important passing is in the NFL in 2018 and weigh each of those players' performances accordingly. So to not to, you know, shatter anyone's expectations here, but passing is the most important predictor of wins at the NFL level. And so that's why quarterbacks accumulate both the most positive wins above replacement and the most negative wins above replacement. They are the people that pass the ball, right? Running, for example, is not nearly as high a predictor of winning at the NFL. Coverage is one of the higher ones. And so you'll see guys that do well in coverage can generate pretty high wins above replacement. But without getting too technical, that's essentially how we derive wins above replacement. And it's been one of the most popular things with our team clients. All 32 of the NFL teams are our clients. They really love this. And it's been great from a content strategy as well, because you've got so many people out there that really want to know, okay, well, I've got a guy like, say, Khalil Mack, and I've got a quarterback like Mitch Trubisky. Where do these guys actually stack up against each other?
Well, we're definitely going to get into how these guys stack up with each other here, especially focusing in on the Chicago Bears. That's next on Locked On Bears. So we're talking analytics here with George C. from Pro Football Focus on Twitter at PFF George. You can hear him on the PFF Forecast podcast as well. And George, I wanted to kind of set up the bigger picture analytics talk to get a little bit more specific to Chicago and the Bears here, because I know the Sloan thing came out recently from the analytics conference where they sort of added some mainstream attention to this idea that about the Raiders potentially winning the Khalil Mack trade. Even that was kind of funny because that came out at the beginning of March and no one really noticed that they did that until like mid to late March. But you guys over at the PFF Forecast have been talking about this really since September. I think you were one of the few voices out in the mass swarm of the internet that was kind of touting the Raiders on this side. So obviously that's pure blaspheme to most Chicago Bears fans listening. So I guess what would kind of be the I will give you the floor to kind of say why from the analytics standpoint do the Oakland Raiders win the Khalil Mack trade?
Yeah, well, there's two sides to every trade, right? You can actually look and say, okay, well, both teams have a perspective that, you know, you could essentially have two teams winning a trade, right? If you think about like the Jets Colts trade, for example, their perspectives were totally different. But in this situation, I actually don't think the perspectives were that drastically different. I know Chicago fans and obviously Ryan Pace and the Chicago Bears sort of felt like Khalil Mack was that missing piece, right? And I think a lot of that certainly has to be placed on the shoulders of Trubisky. How do you feel about Mitchell Trubisky in that situation? Because if you're giving up a couple of first round picks, you are sort of saying, look, we're not going to reset at the quarterback position for a few years. You know, this is our guy. And so we obviously don't have nearly as high of an opinion as most, or yeah, maybe not most, but some Chicago Bears fans do. So that's one part of it. But just looking at the trade on its face, you're giving up a couple of first round picks. First round picks have a ton of value. Khalil Mack does have a ton of value, but he's also a guy that's going to take up a ton of your salary cap. So just to put it in terms of wins above replacement, for example, Khalil Mack, his best season ever with the Raiders was about 1.5 wins, a little more than that, wins above replacement. So that's pretty good. To give you some context there, Aaron Donald last year was about 2.25. So not quite, you know, the most elite of defensive linemen, but certainly up there. But if you are picking a couple of first round picks, you're going to win that trade more often than not. Depending on whether you take a quarterback or not, you're going to be up around a 1.7, 1.8 wins above replacement. So, you know, to me, and the way that the math works out, I just really think what the Raiders got was a great deal in terms of rebuilding your franchise. And from the Bears standpoint, it's tough because Khalil Mack was great for the Raiders and the Raiders were a terrible team. So it's hard to see a guy that doesn't play the quarterback position lifting your team over the top. And ultimately, whether you have Khalil Mack or not, it's going to come down to how well does Mitch Trubisky play.
And I think that's a good point that it sometimes can get lost on people. And I think in this as well, when you might say that it was a better deal for the Oakland Raiders, it doesn't necessarily mean it was a bad deal for the Chicago Bears in that sense. I mean, that you can find reasons to like it for both sides. But I think one of the things people might say, and I think I kind of know the answer to this, but there's this idea that, well, A, you know, you have to see how the Raiders' picks are going to be, and if they blow those picks, then obviously it's a bad thing. But we're talking a little bit more process versus results here. But also, I think there's this idea that, well, the Oakland Raiders can't get any – are unlikely to get a player in those draft picks other than perhaps a quarterback that would be as good or as elite as a player as Khalil Mack is at what he does. Whereas, you know, being able to acquire Mack with those picks is acquiring a player that is otherwise very difficult to acquire. Is the point more that maybe we overinflate just how valuable Khalil Mack is?
I think that's part of it. I think a lot of people value pass rush a little bit more than they should. I think if there's one really interesting thing that we've discovered over the past 2 years, and it was a surprise to me, it's simply that performance in coverage is more predictive of winning games than performance in the pass rush. And when you sort of break it down and think about it, it starts to make a little bit more sense because the quarterback is really the one that dictates things, right? You can throw the ball quickly, and if you can't cover, you'll be able to get rid of the ball in 2 seconds. And there's nothing really that a pass rush can necessarily do about that. And you know, I think the Patriots have actually been a great example of that. So I think that's part of it. People overvalue Khalil Mack a little bit. But the second thing is that when you get 2 first-round picks, you don't need to get a Khalil Mack. You don't necessarily need that to happen to win the trade. So you could put, you know, you could take 2 cornerbacks and they could be, you know, slightly above average players. You've won the trade in that situation because you're paying them pennies compared to what Khalil Mack is making, and you've got 2 players that are the sum together acquiring more value for your team than Khalil Mack. So people do look at it in sort of a binary way. I think that's a problem. But also you have to measure the process, right? There's looking back on trades is always the wrong way to say who won this trade. There are worlds where the Bears win this trade, right? You don't win a trade 100% to zero. You know, you might win it 70% to 30%, which means, look, there's 30% of the times, 3 out of 10 times, the Bears will win this trade. That's not, you know, impossible. So for the Bears to end up getting the most value out of this trade would not be shocking. It just would be improbable.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I mean, a lot of that does, again, kind of come down to when you look at it in kind of hindsight there, what the Oakland Raiders end up doing with their picks. And I think sometimes that can be a little bit of a flawed way to evaluate it, because it's, you're sort of, you want to give the team, the Raiders, credit for perhaps making the smart move for them for team building strategy, even if perhaps the people and then the picks that they end up picking aren't necessarily the right ones for, but the idea behind it was perhaps still the smarter move for them as a franchise.
And I mean, you think about it this way, the Raiders were not, they weren't competing for even the division with Khalil Mack, right? They were a bottom 5 defense. They were bottom 1 or 2 defense with Khalil Mack playing at a very high level for the past, you know, 4 seasons, right? There's no bones about it. They were atrocious, and Khalil Mack had great seasons, but they couldn't cover anybody, right? So, you know, from the Raiders standpoint, I didn't really understand why Raiders fans were so up in arms about it, because you're gonna pay all this money to a guy who, look, clearly is a great player, but he is not going to take you from being an average team that you have been prior to all of a sudden being a Super Bowl contender in the future. That's just not going to happen. He's only getting older. So from their standpoint, I think it made a ton of sense. From the Bears standpoint, they were hoping that they were one piece away. If you ask me what that piece is, it's quarterback play, right? And I think we've seen after that season with Khalil Mack, who he didn't play a ton of snaps, so, you know, just about 0.8 wins above replacement. But, you know, certainly when he was playing, played at a high level. And what did the season come down to? It came down to, well, Mitchell Trubisky was, by process a below average quarterback. And if they're going to move forward, he's got to be an above average guy.
Yeah, I know the Mitchell Trubisky talk, particularly when it comes to analytics, is going to get some people fired up listening to this. So we're going to dive deep on Mitchell Trubisky and what the numbers say about his performance this past season next on Locked On Bears. Let's use that to turn our attention there a little bit. I know when I run the PFF underscore Bears Twitter account, and the tweets I get about Mitchell Trubisky and his grade certainly have added, or I guess subtracted, years from my life. But regardless, I know you guys kind of feel from an analytics standpoint that the Chicago Bears are a team likely to regress in 2019. I think in Chicago there's this idea that, you know, they were kind of still taking a first step this year, and that, of course, every offseason, every young player is guaranteed to get better the following year, because every player always gets better every year, right, George? But, you know, to some extent, there's some of that. There's this idea that likely Trubisky should, in theory, get better, and some younger players should get better. Obviously, not everything is going to go right, but how much of them as a regression candidate is about them overachieving in 2019 or 2018, and how much of it is about things maybe just not progressing as much as fans might expect?
Well, we saw this last year with the Jacksonville Jaguars. They had, yeah, and I don't mean this to be mean, but I often refer to Mitchell Trubisky and the Bears this season as Bortles North and the Jags of 17, because they've got a lot of similarities in that the defense was the stellar component of that team, right? And no one is going to say that the Jaguars in 2017 were led by Blake Bortles' great play. He benefited from a top of the line defense. The Jaguars were the best defense in the NFL in 2017. And the tough thing about defense is that it is a very unstable component relative to offense. I don't have the exact number here, but it's around half, about half as stable, if memory serves me correctly. And one of the reasons for that is that coverage play, which we just talked about, how important that is very unstable from season to season. And I think one of the reasons that is, if you want to sort of wrap your head around why that's the case, is the offense drives the narrative, right? So if you have five defensive backs out there and, say, you know, two linebackers, and you've got one of them that just can't cover, well, any decent offense is going to pick you apart, because they're going to put that guy in a compromising situation. So in order to remain a top level coverage team and a top level defense, you have to remain so solid in coverage. It's just very hard to do. So that's one component of it. The second is that turnovers are just as unstable as they can possibly, as you can find in football, right? It's just something that the ball bounces one way, and all of a sudden you've got, you know, five extra turnovers in the season, and that can make a huge difference. And the Bears benefited from those things quite a bit. So, and just to give you a couple of notes here, we have something called a turnover-worthy throw. So those are throws that you would expect about half the time that the defense would pick off. They are the worst throws of the worst, right? And the Bears actually picked off turnover-worthy throws at a 70% rate, so about 20% higher than the NFL average, which is the best mark in the entire NFL. You just expect that to regress, right? That is, by and large, a lot of luck, right? You can have the same great play, guy makes an incredible tip, and the ball just bounces a foot further to the left, and all of a sudden it falls incomplete instead of getting that turnover. On the other side of things, they had the most interceptions on throws that were actually, you know, decent throws that shouldn't have generally been picked off, but they made a tremendous play on the ball and it resulted in a turnover. So those are just things that you expect to regress. And if those things happen, the defense will not be as good. And Trubisky was just a guy who, in general, his process was far worse than the results.
Could you go in depth on Trubisky? I mean, I understand this is a little bit on the spot. I've tried to explain this, and it's difficult because I tend to be more on that side of the spectrum with Mitchell Trubisky, that the traditional box score statistics of him don't tell the story. I mean, if you, the thing that bothers me the most is when people point to ESPN QBR and say, I think Trubisky was like top five in ESPN QBR, so therefore he had a great season. And I kind of explain it along the ways of, you know, not having a lot of really those positive throws, those big time throws downfield, and taking a lot of sort of underneath stuff and having plenty of inaccuracies that kind of outbalance things towards the negative. But do you have any more nuance you can kind of add to that?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that Eric and I sort of always talk about on our podcast with being important for quarterbacks. The first is minimizing negatively graded throws, or to make it a little more understandable, minimizing uncatchable throws, right? The worst thing that you can do as a quarterback is throw a pass that cannot, with any reasonable amount of athleticism, be caught by your player, right? And so those are not only very important in terms of winning football games, but they're also generally pretty stable from season to season. In other words, you sort of, those are the things that are most commonly the same or consistent if you go from season to season. And so those things are worrisome, because Trubisky was 31st out of 35 in limiting uncatchable throws. He was well below league average on those intermediate throws, 10 to 19 yards downfield, about 9% fewer accurate throws in the intermediate side of the field. I'm going to pull up negatively graded throws here for you on the spot. He was actually last in the NFL in negative grade rate per dropback. So when you think about that, right, that's the thing that's most stable from season to season, and he was last in it last season. So that's worrisome. Why did they end up having a good year, though, is the question that I think people always bring up. How can your process be so bad and you end up with such good results? And the simple response to that is you have guys on your offense that are making great plays, right? How many times did we see Tariq Cohen make an incredible play? He was their second most valuable player last year because of that. You also have receivers making great catches. So Trubisky had the second lowest drop rate in the entire NFL last year. And Deshaun Watson was the only guy that had a lower drop rate. So what I mean by that is an on-target throw that isn't dropped, right, is caught by the receiver. So Trubisky got kind of lucky from that standpoint. So those are things that can make up for pretty quickly a bad process. He also had, I think it was a bottom five rate of his really bad throws, his turnover-worthy throws, actually result in interceptions. I think there was, if memory serves me correctly, this was in the playoff game against the Eagles. And I was at that game with NBC, and there was a microcosm of this with Nick Foles and Trubisky. They basically threw the same terrible, awful throw, I want to say over the middle of the field, straight to a defender. And I think maybe Foles was to the right. But anyways, Foles' pass was picked off, and Trubisky's hit the receiver in the face, basically, and fell to the ground. And both of those get graded the same by PFF standards, right? They're both terrible throws that should have been picked off. The result of them is up to luck, and those are things that you expect to regress to the mean from season to season. So the Bears have been on the right side of variance with respect to quarterback play, certainly last season, and you just simply expect that to regress.
And when we talk about regression here, just to wrap up, and I think when we talk about the Jacksonville Jaguars, obviously they kind of went from the top to really getting close to rock bottom, a 5-11 season. I kind of get the impression that that's not so much the prediction. I mean, obviously it's still a little bit too early to start predicting records or anything, but when you talk about the Bears regressing, that's not the Bears being terrible again, but maybe just coming down a little bit more back down to earth?
Absolutely. I mean, the Jaguars had a particularly, we call it the season from hell, right? I think that would accurately describe where the Jaguars came from. But it's so hard to keep up a top-of-the-line turnover ratio. That's just not going to happen. It's also just so hard to keep continuity in the secondary. You know, of the 16 most valuable players for the Bears last season, 13 of them were defenders, and 8 of them were guys whose biggest contribution was in coverage. So, you know, you lose a player here or there, right? They have lost a couple of players in the secondary. It's just so hard to keep all of those guys at a playing at a high level. And then you have all that variance that comes back into play. So even if they fall off, say, to, you know, a 10, 12 best defense, maybe even better than that, say they're an 8 or 9 top defense in the NFL, all of a sudden you've put a lot more pressure on Mitch Trubisky to make plays. And so you are relying on him to greatly improve the process, given that you'd expect some regression with kind of the catch rate and some of those turnover-worthy throws.
Well, hopefully there's still a couple people listening.
maybe one or two.
Maybe. But I appreciate the perspective, and I think it's important to sort of get, especially from the outside, because I think, you know, people in Chicago, you get really caught up, and it's easy to get excited about this team and how everything is always going to be a little bit better, and things are always going to be up and up, and that's not always the case. So I appreciate you joining us today. Can you tell us a little bit more about the PFF forecast, if people want to kind of hear more about the math and the things that go in behind this?
Sure, and I think it's important to say that I'm not trying to be overly negative, right? It's just something, I'm just trying to lay out a couple of facts here, and personally, I would love nothing more than to see the Bears have a great season, because that means I get to spend a little bit more time in Chicago. Chicago is a wonderful place. That team and that franchise and that city is one of the best atmospheres for football in the NFL. I think that speaks to, you know, obviously the NFL will be starting their season there, and that is a huge reason why. I can't tell you the number of great conversations I've had just with Uber drivers in Chicago. Every time I fly in there, I've got a guy that is passionate about the team. And so I really hope that Trubisky takes the next step. I really hope that their, you know, defense can remain, a top level defense, but I have to be the bearer of sometimes bad news by telling you what happens to be most stable from season to season. That said, if you want to, you know, hear a little bit more about it or ask some questions for us, you can hit myself or Eric, PFF_Eric, up on Twitter and listen to the PFF forecast, which is on Podcast One. Ask some questions. You can be mean if you want. I won't take it personally. But we'd love, you know, I think one of the best things really about the advancement of math in sports is that you can answer more questions. And that means you can ask more questions. So that's generally how we learn, is by people asking interesting questions. And, that'll advance, I think, everyone's enjoyment of the sport overall.
Well, if anybody's seen George and Eric do their podcast and do their videos on the PFF YouTube channel, you can see George has some guns, so he's not scared of anybody coming his way.
I'm not worried about it. I welcome it.
Well, George, I appreciate you joining us on the podcast today, and hopefully we'll touch base again here soon, especially as the season gets closer, and we'll see kind of how the draft goes out with these Oakland Raiders draft picks and stuff. Should be a lot of fun football ahead of us here. Appreciate you taking the time.
Of course, man. Anytime.
Thanks again to George Shahuri for joining us on the podcast today. Still haven't pronounced that last name correctly, but I'm not sure anyone on this planet besides he and his family can. If you enjoyed our conversation, or even if you didn't, I hope you at least learned something and can take away a little bit of a different perspective from this. But either way, you should subscribe to the podcast to hear more episodes that won't feature George, but will hopefully feature more insightful conversations that help teach you more and more about this Chicago Bears team. You can find the podcast wherever you download your shows: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher. We are on Himalaya as well. So many different ways to download and keep up with the show. I'd also appreciate if you could leave us a rating and a review on iTunes or whatever apps you use that allow for those type of things. So it helps us move up the rankings a little bit more and help reach more Bears fans. And just a reminder, you can join in the conversation on the show with the Locked On Bears voicemail and text phone line. The number is 312-620-8590. You've got questions, you've got comments, you've got rants, you've got concerns. You just want to talk Bears and hear it on this podcast. Give us a text, leave us a voicemail, join the show that way. You can also tweet us at Locked On Bears. You can join the Locked On Bears Facebook group. Follow us on Instagram, Locked On Bears as well. So many different ways to keep up with the show. We'll have more draft talk coming your way in coming weeks. We're going to break down this compensatory pick situation here because I think there's some confusion about that. That'll be coming on an upcoming podcast as well. Plenty of Bears talk all off season long. It's the only way you're going to get through it. It's the only way you're going to bear down.